Hello, everyone. Thanks for giving us your time today. This is VR Download, and I'm Ian Hamilton in New York, broadcasting today with David Heaney in London. Some quick notes for new viewers. Myself and David Heaney meet here each week in virtual reality in a studio he built to discuss the next steps of personal computing. I'm using a Quest Pro right now with face and eye tracking so I can make weird expressions, and you can see that from time to time. We've got a global audience out there, and as always, please let us know from where you're watching. We love to see that. We love to see what weird places people are watching us from. David, it's been a very, very busy week. Big news to get into. Probably some exclusive news that we get to show for the first time in this broadcast. But what do we have to get into today, David?
A lot of news has dropped in the past few days, and not as much last week. We were thinking this would be a quite quiet show, but we're going to talk about the Steam VR beta update that shows the correct controller models for Quest 3 and Pro and upgrades the theater mode. We're going to talk about Quest 3 appearing on the October Steam hardware survey, but the reason that doesn't really matter yet because of two important caveats. We're going to talk about Virtual Desktop's new update, which just released 1 hour ago, and we have, I think, exclusive reporting on it on uploadvr.com. I don't think anyone else has covered that. And it adds a new optional OpenXR runtime that can bypass Steam VR to improve performance, and it even boosts the Quest 3 bitrate all the way up to 500 megabits per second. So crazy stuff for PC VR streaming. We'll talk about how Meta is gradually merging Horizon Worlds into the Quest system software, a multi-year process that we have indications will continue to increase over time. We will talk about what I think is probably the biggest story on the grand scale of the industry today, which is Meta's CTO saying that they asked Google to bring the Play Store to Quest, that same Play Store on your Android phone or tablet, but Google said no, according to him. We'll then talk about some Apple Vision Pro news. Tim Cook said that it will be in our stores only. We'll talk about what that means and how Apple might use a kind of custom per customer tailored buying process that's suitable for a wearable product like a headset. We'll talk about the report from Mark Gurman that Apple is still working on full body tracking, including your legs, for Vision Pro. We will talk about the report that Apple is developing a next generation battery for use in many of its products that could give it a battery life edge over all its competitors in the XR space. And finally, we will talk about the massive news that ByteDance-owned Pico is laying off a significant portion of its workforce. And we'll talk about what that might mean for Pico and for the industry, and what it might say about the current state of the industry in general. So 9 pretty huge topics today. This is probably going to be quite a long show.
Yeah, going to be a big show. I will have a hard stop at some point if we go a little too long, but I don't think we'll get there. But yes, I have just spent a lot of my last couple days diving into what is exactly going on with Pico, with David Heaney over here and my team, trying to sort this out, reaching out to sources, contacting them, and we're gonna do what we've getting in the habit of here. We're gonna circle back on that subject at the end. That's gonna be a big subject, and so you're just gonna have to wait it out. If people come in the comments angry that we're not to that subject yet, we will get to it. It's not clickbait. We'll get into it, and we're gonna have some exclusive stuff in our reporting there as we get to it. But David, why don't we start right at the top there with this Steam VR beta showing the correct controller models for Quest 3 and Quest Pro, as well as these upgrades to theater mode.
Yeah, so beforehand, if you were using your Quest Pro in Steam VR, you'll have noticed that you still saw the kind of old Rift CV1 controllers with rings. Sometimes you would see, in certain cases, if you're using certain methods, the Quest 2 controllers. The point is, you would see visual controllers in Steam VR that have rings, whereas you have these ringless Touch Pro controllers. Now, Steam VR in the latest beta update has render models for those Pro controllers and for the Quest 3's new Touch Plus controllers. So you'll see your actual controllers rendered in VR. It's not the biggest change in the world, but it's a nice quality of life update. It also means, especially if you're bringing your controllers very close together, you'll no longer see them clip through each other with sort of fake virtual rings that they don't have. That's very nice. The other upgrade is the theater mode. The old desktop game theater separate app that was part of Valve's offering has been deprecated or will be deprecated and is being replaced by ThetaScreen, which is more integrated into the UI. So when you want to launch and play a 2D game, rather than going into this kind of separate desktop game theater, it's part of this same new Steam VR 2.0 UI. You can just pop these apps up into this immersive theater screen that has nice reflections, and you know, it's just as customizable as the rest. I suspect one of the reasons for doing this, because right now there's not a massive difference between what this really is to the end user, I suspect the reason for this is so that when Steam VR eventually supports more mixed reality use cases, that this is one of those offerings. So perhaps when Valve decides to release a headset that has mixed reality capabilities, you can just dock off 2D games like a typical Steam game into this view and have this be part of your real environment.
Yeah, well, and I don't know if I go there, but like right now you can do some of that in a completely immersive environment, like right now, right? Like there's, Valve is aware of all the people that go into just the opening room of Half-Life Alyx and enjoy that lookout over the city and just use that as a hangout to just paint in. Like, I know there's the overlay sort of work where you can insert an app into that space and just look around, right? I'm trying to understand how convenient will Valve make it to have docked windows around you in any app that you use.
Yeah, some of those explorations around these overlays have been fascinating. It doesn't seem to be Valve's main focus right now. With this, for example, you know, they recommend closing whatever VR app you have for this. This is very much so focused around you want to play a traditional 2D non-VR game in your headset on a massive virtual screen. It's something that maybe this rumored Deckard headset, if it does arrive, will be capable of. You know, just as we've seen that the Steam Deck can run pretty much any game on Steam, maybe we'll see Deckard being able to out of the box run this, or maybe it'll just connect to your PC wirelessly and stream this so that, you know, no matter where you are in the house, you can just lie back in your headset and play this on a massive virtual screen. But agree with you, it'll be fascinating because of the extra power of PCs to see over time how much of this multitasking stuff comes from just experimental things that people are doing to something that Valve really endorses and integrates into the software at a first party or first class level.
Is 3D supported on this gaming screen?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure the answer is no.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing. I guess we would watch. I'd be curious to see how that develops. One of the things I've long wondered, and I think we've talked about it a little bit, but is this idea of all the modded content that exists on Steam to add VR modes to old games. I wonder about the feasibility of those types of things running on a Deckard-type headset and whether Valve would try to embrace what Steam Workshop content that's made for VR as first-party content on a Deckard-type system. I know performance is a nightmare to even ponder in that scenario, but I do wonder when Valve makes statements like all the new stuff on Steam coming to Steam VR 2 or coming forward, I would imagine that would be somewhere in their priority list at some point.
It really is the biggest unanswered question about that Deckard headset, that rumored Deckard headset. How much will it focus on standalone and how much will it focus on just being a really great wireless PC headset that has, you know, 2D Linux apps built in standalone? Where is that line going to be drawn by Valve? Are they going for Quest or are they going for a Index 2? What is their real focus here? We just don't know yet. We have, you know, there's a lot of leaks about what form Deckard may take, but there's really nothing still concrete about what is Valve's actual strategy for this product. And, you know, again, Valve has confirmed that they are making a headset. They have really not said much else, to be honest. They have not officially confirmed anything about their long-term VR strategy in years.
It's funny, I'm seeing in our comments people talking about autonomous cars and kind of catching up, I think, a little bit there to the connection between cars and VR. There is an obvious connection there. There's already startups exploring that connection. We've joked about it on previous shows. But did you see a little tease, supposedly, that was in the Apple show for Apple's car project that's been fabled for years. I think it would be surprising if the technology that is in the Apple Vision Pro doesn't get reused in other ways, like in a car. And a little like anecdote on the car thing, I just want to share this. When Google killed Daydream and they like slowly shuttered that project, there was a PR contact at Google that I was in contact with who was the frequent person I asked questions for about Google and its VR efforts. They moved on to the autonomous car project. And my comment to them when I left was like, oh, well, we'll be at this long enough. We'll go full circle. Hopefully I'll talk to you again someday when we end up using VR headsets in cars. And it's a joke, but it's ultimately true. Like, if you really need to get somewhere that you can only see in the physical world, the most obvious way to pass the time is going to be in a headset. All right, let's talk about this next subject, about Quest 3 appearing on the October Steam Hardware Survey.
Yeah, just one comment I want to point out first. Artful is saying that there is a third-party Steam VR overlay that can do 3D games called Display Plus, so that's great to hear. But yeah, as I was saying, it's not something that's part of Valve's first-party offering. But the good part about the PC ecosystem is you don't have to worry about what the platform holder did in their first-party offerings. There's always going to be a third-party mod or tool or, you know, some sort of system that lets you do what you want. That is one of the incredible things about the PC platform and something that will keep the PC platform alive and well for probably decades to come. But yes, Quest 3 now appears on the Steam Hardware Survey in October. It is at 0.15% of Steam VR users compared to 36.69% for Quest 2 and 0.35% for Quest Pro. So it's still not even half of where Quest Pro is, but here comes the caveat that I was referring to at the start. Firstly, virtual desktop is not counted in these statistics. Only Link is counted in these statistics. Virtual desktop, until the update that released just over an hour ago, reported Quest 3 as Quest 2. So that also means that you wouldn't have, even with that Steam VR beta, seen the correct controllers. But now, as of that update today, virtual desktop will show up. So we should see that increase the numbers for November's data, which is what will be really interesting, because the other problem is, of course, that Quest 3 wasn't out for all of October. Quest 3 only started shipping on October 10th. So anyone who was sampled before October 10th, they could not have had a Quest 3. So for those two reasons, this figure is a lot lower than we expect. The next month's November hardware survey is where we expect to get a real indication of how Quest 3's launch has done for PC VR users.
So Andre here with a very big question we'll get into in a second. I think it's a very obvious question, like a one that a lot of people are going to have. But I want to just point out one thing. Like, I guess, suppose we can bring this chart up later in the show, but I want to, as a teaser for later, point out to everyone where Pico 4 is on this list, right? So our last subject of the news, we are going to come back to it again, of course, is Pico. But here is what a year of effort from Pico was able to do against Meta. And I like where it sits relative to two dead Quest headsets, right? Two dead Meta headsets, right? That's what Pico could do in a year. So we'll see what we can make of that little fact when we get to later in the show, but I just wanted to point that out. Let's talk about that question, David. Do you want to read that out and get into it?
Yeah, I think we can answer that question as we move into the next topic, which is very directly related, unless you have anything more to say about this. You want to move on to the next one?
Yeah, that makes sense. It's a very, very related thing. And if we've got Geek Odin in our comments, we'd love to hear from you. Geek Odin is the creator of Virtual Desktop and frequent watcher of the show. Thank you for watching. And this feature is specifically about virtual desktop. So this is going to be in a specific answer to that question.
Yeah, so as many of you will know, and as the questioner will obviously know, is they're currently using Quest 2 for PC VR. Quest does have a built-in feature to act as a PC VR headset called Link. That's the USB version. The Wi-Fi version is called AirLink. But before Airlink shipped, over a year before Airlink shipped, there was Virtual Desktop, the third-party application from Guy Godin. And even today, many people prefer using Virtual Desktop because it works better for many people. It has many new other features, additional features, and Guy Godin is constantly updating it to take advantage of the latest hardware and to add new software features. And, you know, the pace of development there is just far, far higher than the pace of development for Link. So the last major update last month, we talked about on this show at the time, added support for Quest 3. And what it did was it added support for the AV1 video codec. It increased the bitrate for the HEVC video codec and also added some other minor features for Quest 3. This new update increases the maximum bitrate for Quest 3 all the way up to 500 megabits per second when using the H.264 Plus codec. So Godin tells us that you would want to use H.264 Plus at 500 megabits when doing fast-paced games like racing games, whereas for slower-paced games, you would still want to use AV1 with 200 megabits per second. The other major change here is that it now includes its own fully functional OpenXR runtime that can be used instead of SteamVR. So you can just launch Virtual Desktop on your PC or have it open at startup, launch Virtual Desktop on your Quest, and go straight in to many of the top VR games on Steam without ever opening SteamVR. And the advantage of that is that you actually get a roughly 10% in performance improvement by completely bypassing SteamVR. The trade-off there is you lose SteamVR's features. You know, you can't bring up a desktop tab while you're in a game, a desktop window while you're in a game. You can't access your Steam notifications. You can't access your Steam friends. But if what you care about is just playing your games at the highest frame rate possible, this is going to get you a roughly 10 FPS boost depending on the game that you're using. So to kind of come straight back to that question, if you get a Quest 3 for PC VR, if you're using it with Virtual Desktop, if you have the latest NVIDIA or AMD GPU family, you can use the AV1 video codec, which gives you much higher quality at the same bit rate, or you can use 500 megabit per second on the traditional H.264 codec. And Guy Godin also tells us that from his testing, Quest 3 has a much better Wi-Fi system. You know, its Wi-Fi performance is better in general. It also supports 6 gigahertz Wi-Fi if you have a Wi-Fi 6E router, which you Quest 2 does not support. So Quest 3 is a much better PC VR headset than Quest 2 for these reasons. As to whether that's worth the $500, that's a question that only you can answer based on your own situation.
But to recap, we do recommend Quest 3 over Quest 2 for a lot of users, just because of how outdated the chip is overall, right?
Yes, but this questioner, if I read correctly, has a Quest 2 at the moment, and they're asking whether they should. But absolutely, we do not recommend anyone buys a new Quest 2 anymore. That is something we've been clear on for weeks. Do not buy a new Quest 2, not only because of Quest 3, but because of what might come next year as well.
Yeah, just wanted to recap that for people that might not be aware of sort of the ongoing recommendation. Those are big gains for Virtual Desktop, and I think it's a... I'm really curious to see what happens with this runtime, like how far Guy takes this and how many people sort of opt in for this sort of avenue. I don't know. Does this put pressure on Valve at all to put these improvements into Steam directly?
That's an interesting question. You do have to imagine that someone working on SteamVR at Valve is seeing this and thinking there's a lot of optimization work we could be doing in SteamVR as an OpenXR runtime, especially if they are, you know, working on this Deckard headset that has been rumored that we keep talking about, their own new headset. If they're, you know, using that, they're going to want to deliver the best possible PC VR performance. It would look terrible from a marketing and PR perspective to say that when you use a Quest, you're going to get 10 more frames per second than when you're using a Deckard. So you would hope that that would happen. A question here from VRMC saying, isn't that only with OpenXR compatible apps? Yes, to be clear, As this is an OpenXR runtime, it will only work with apps that use OpenXR. But since 2020, 3 years ago, Valve has been recommending developers to use OpenXR rather than its own OpenVR API for SteamVR. So a huge percentage of the content that's been updated within the last few years on Steam that supports VR uses OpenXR, but not all. There are some notable exceptions, and one of those, for example, is VRChat. VRChat does not use OpenXR. How this works in virtual desktop is, to be clear, this is completely optional. You have an automatic setting, a always Steam VR setting, and an always VDXR setting. Currently, the automatic setting only uses VDXR for a few select apps, but my understanding is that Godin will be increasing that whitelist over time. And yes, as Godin is pointing out in our comments, this was not developed by him. Guy Godin did not develop VDXR. It was actually a Microsoft software engineer called Matthew Buccinieri. I apologize, Matthew, if I'm butchering your name there. He developed it in his spare time, and Guy Godin has integrated it. And yeah, Matthew has previously worked at companies like SpaceX and PlayStation, so he sounds like a pretty hardcore software engineer that has done some really deep low-level work here and delivered something incredible. You know, this is like getting a slightly faster GPU for free. This is incredible if you're someone who uses PC VR.
Yeah, and I appreciated Guy in the comments. They're just pointing out that these optimizations have been floating out there, I think, for 6 years. Recommendations made by Valve 6 years ago. These are implement. Are you referring to like a GDC talk, Guy? That like you're saying that? I'd be curious more detail on that story, because it's funny to think that all Guy did was implement things that were public knowledge for a long time, and he got these gains. Like, that's a little weird.
Yes, again, to be clear, that would be Matthew doing those changes and then Guy integrating it into virtual desktop. But Headset Historian is posting an interesting comment here, saying that Matthew is an absolute legend in the VR community and has done a lot of work with Pimax headsets and compatibility software for them. So that's fascinating to hear. I looked at Matthew's history as part of this story, and it does look like his open source contributions, as well as the things he's worked on at SpaceX and PlayStation and today Microsoft, are incredible. So well done to that. But yes, Guy seems to be saying that a lot of the optimizations Matthew made, were, as you say, the suggestions that Valve publicly made but hasn't done themselves, which is fascinating. But to be clear, Valve obviously has this much larger feature set to support. This is just a runtime that just runs the games. Steam VR is a runtime and a whole interface system and way to interact with your PC and manage your apps and Steam. And, you know, it's more featureful. I'm not saying that lets them off the hook for performance, but we should note that.
Very, very big gains. Let's move on to this next subject, I think. Good job to Guy. I'm seeing everyone in the comments responding to a good showing for Guy. We've broken a couple of news stories with Guy over the years. When I'm a broken record on this. We have him in the audience. I'll mention it again. I think it's really important to have the context whenever we like talk about virtual desktop. Remember the timeline of what happened, right? Virtual desktop had PC VR streaming in the app very, very early on in the Quest lifecycle, and was not allowed to put that feature into the app for months and months and months, until Meta had its own version of the feature nearly ready to go by about 2 months. So he had about 2 months lead time where he was able to put his app into the store with this feature. The feature that everyone is talking about and loves so often for PC VR streaming. And he lost money for that. At the same time, he's making money off the Quest platform. But like, so we've gotten some heated debate in our comments in the past about that dynamic. But I think it's always worth remembering this is a lone dev doing and putting in this work in these hours to bring this product to you. And it's not the same thing as this big giant corporation. And I want to always remind people of that.
Yeah, it is truly incredible how far virtual desktop has come, as some people are saying in the comments. And it really is also a reflection on the fact that Meta has not really given Link the attention that it probably should. You know, I think Air Link still doesn't support 120 hertz on Quest 3, never mind AV1 or any of these other features that Virtual Desktop supports. It just seems that over time, the gulf between Air Link and Virtual Desktop is just significantly diverging. And one of the small things was that Link actually, it's Oculus's OpenXR runtime did have a little bit better performance in Virtual Desktop because it was reliant on Steam VR. But now that it has VDXR, it kicks off that one little trade-off anyway. It is really just incredible. I think the only reason that a lot of people still use Air Link is because Virtual Desktop is $20. But if you are using a PC VR, if you're using this for PC VR, you're basically buying a standalone headset and then buying a PC VR headset for $20. It's a good deal, I think.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to think about it. And I'm where was this comment? There's some really interesting comments that we need to talk about on PC overall and pay attention to the optimizations that various members of the community put into PC VR, because we try to have this balanced view and in recognition that, you know, for a lot of people, PC VR is it's a hard thing, right? It's not easy to necessarily get a great experience out of hardware that you've got to like shave money out of your budget to go get it. So finding ways to cut corners or get stuff to run okay on budget level hardware is always really, really, really useful by a lot of people. And we'll have to pay attention to that going forward.
Yeah, just
I want to talk about Meta gradually merging Horizon Worlds into the Quest.
Just one last comment software. I'm just going to bring just before we move to this. Just Kevin Teke is asking, I think he's asking Guy, but if Guy doesn't respond, I'll just say for now, he's asking, why is AV1 better as a 4080 Quest
right
3
there.
Owner? It'd be nice to know. Guy Godin has replied that AV1 is a new codec that uses the latest and greatest techniques. It's comparable to HEVC, but doesn't have the licensing requirement. So yes, it is just the newest video codec, which means per bit rate, it's more efficient, i.e. per bit rate, you get a higher quality. So like we were saying earlier, if you're using a game that isn't fast-paced, but has a lot of gradients and has a lot of kind of detail, that will come across better in AV1. You'll see less compression artifacts. And yeah, it's just something that I've tried AV1 on Quest 3, and it is remarkable how close it is to wired. I think with every improvement like this, every new bitrate, every new codec, it just shaves down more and more of that gap between a native DisplayPort connection and a wireless headset. And I think personally now, for the fact that you get wireless, the trade-off is more than worth it, unless you are the world's top compression snob and you can notice the tiniest of compression artifacts, in which case, you know, fair play, that's everyone's different. I think the trade-off is more than worth it, and I would never personally go back to using a cable for PC VR.
Yeah, I was thinking of this one last anecdote before we move on to that next subject, where there was this news. We were in conversation over the weekend with the head of VR over at Meta, and there were these people spotting this bug in the system of something related to PC VR being seen on Quest headsets. And they're like, oh yeah, they admitted it was a bug and said they're working on it. But the simple question of what were you testing has thus far gone on unanswered. But it's funny to me, this difference here, right? Here's Guy Godin, this developer, lone developer, rolling out big, new, massive updates to his platform as a beta, as a testing release for a small segment of his audience, and then rolling out shortly thereafter as a full release. And boom, it's a massive, massive update for all of his customers. And what is like the equivalent state of technology and testing over on Meta? Oops, we rolled something out and you saw it for a second. Let's put it back behind the veil. Like it points out where the PC VR market in particular has been held up by indie small devs, and Guy Godin is definitely one of them. So let's move on to this next subject about Meta gradually merging Horizon Worlds into the Quest system software. this is something we've been watching very closely for a very long time. And it's been done piecemeal fashion in little itty bitty steps, some of them not advertised and some of them obviously very obvious. But David, why don't you break down for us exactly what is going on here and its implications for people that have these headsets?
So for well over a year now, Meta has been suggesting Horizon Worlds destinations in the headset's default Explore page and the mobile app. And recently we even saw the Explore page that you boot into when you start up a quest, this default UI pane, be renamed to Horizon Feed. And Meta, when they were introducing this, gave this example of how it would very prominently suggest Horizon Worlds destinations, such as their flagship Super Rumble shooter that they built in it using their next-gen creator tools where they can import models and textures. So this is an example of, you know, you boot up your quest and immediately you're suggested not an app, but a destination within Horizon Worlds. Now, more recently, we've seen Meta merge the profile systems between Horizon Worlds and Quest. So you can see on the right here, the Quest profile system, and on the left is the new Horizon profile system. As you can see, they're essentially identical. When you now change your bio or your name in Quest, it syncs over to Horizon Worlds. They're using the same profile system, no longer a separate system. In the past month, we've seen another merging, this time of the chat systems. So now a chat within Horizon Worlds is exactly the same as a chat within the Quest system, which has always been the same as the chat within the Oculus app. You start a text conversation with someone in Horizon Worlds, it is the exact same chat backend as Quest, completely unified. So you're seeing these small little unifications over time. Then at Connect, when Mark Zuckerberg was describing the augments feature for Quest 3, we saw what looks to be the next step. And some people noticed this, but I think very few did. And it's that in this new library that seems to be one of the future Quest updates, where you see this new library UI, you can see three distinct sections. There was the augment section that was being discussed. There's the normal applications. But there's this third category, worlds, and that is the icon for Horizon Worlds. So what it looks like the next step is that within your library, you will have this worlds tab that displays Horizon Worlds destinations alongside apps. You know, they are presented there that you can directly launch into instead of having to launch into the Horizon Worlds app and navigate there. This is something that you will have in home. So you can go directly from home to the experiences. Perhaps it'll also be searchable. We don't know the extent of this. So what you can clearly see over time is that whether you like it or not, whether you want it or not, Meta is bringing the Horizon experience into Quest and the Quest experience into Horizon and making them inseparable. And the one step that has not been announced or teased, but that we think could be happening in the next few years, because it seems like the obvious next step would be, what's the point if this integration is going to take place in having a separate Horizon home, your current Quest home, and Horizon Worlds home? That's so confusing to even say. It seems like what could be possible, unless there is some sort of anti-competition measure that Meta would want to avoid by doing this, that Meta will replace your Quest home, your Horizon home, with your Horizon Worlds home, so that when you boot into the headset, as soon as you toggle from pass-through to VR, you're in Horizon. Again, we have no confirmation of that. That's the speculative part, but it seems to be what the company is building to here over the long term.
Now, what's that? That breaks my brain a little bit, because it, you know, my home is my physical home, right? My physical world. I'm looking at my home with the headset off. I put the headset on. Ideally, I've got a pass-through view of that home as my first experience inside the headset. And ideally, that's kind of the way I guess it would work across most headsets going forward. And so, like, that's instantly, from having that pass-through view, I'm going to be layering some things on. I'm going to want some things layered on top almost from the moment, yeah, in terms of these augments, right? But how quickly do I want to go to a fully immersive view where I'm locked out? And I don't, that's a still an unknown to me, I guess. Like, we've also talked about this idea of the headset ring, or I guess getting a phone call, or like, in this case, the knock at the door. What does someone calling you on a headset with a Horizon Home look like? Like, that's what gets me. What is the end game for them aligning this with their messenger strategy, right? Such that someone can come knock on your Horizon Home door and you hear a knock, knock, knock on your headset, you put it on and you see the person's avatar waiting for you. Is that how it's going to work?
Yeah, I think it'd be a ringing rather than a knock. I mean, I don't know if I've ever heard anyone change their phone's ringtone to a knock. It seems like it'd be pretty easy to miss. But, obviously I get your point, what you're saying. That's kind of synchronous communication does seem like it's possible. I think maybe Meta would wait for their future codec avatars project to ship to start to really focus on things like that, to where it's compelling. Because right now, just hanging out with someone as an avatar is not the compelling part of VR. It's what you can do with them as an avatar. You know, it's whether you're in walkabout mini golf to take a drink, whether you're in, 11 table tennis, whether you're playing an online shooter game with them, it's what you're doing. It's, yes, the physical sense of social presence matters because you feel like you're doing it with your friend, even though today avatars and characters are still fairly primitive. But just hanging out with someone, that's something still people are going to do with a FaceTime or Zoom call, because if you're not doing anything else, there's no true advantage to the avatars yet until they get to photorealism. But yeah, I don't understand that there is this inherent tension between this new Quest 3 strategy of you're in pass-through when you put the headset on, and pass-through is the default and augments is the focus, and what Meta's focus for years has been, which has been on Horizon, which has been making Horizon, from their perspective, the premier destination when you put on your headset, trying to shovel everything into Horizon, something that's still happening. But yeah, there is that massive tension of Horizon is a fully immersive VR app, and all of this new focus is on mixed reality, which puts you in your real room. Right now we do have this toggle option on the bar, the toggles between them. You have the double tap feature. And I do, I've spoken to a lot of people who own a Quest 3 who say that they still have their headset set to virtual reality because they don't want to see their real room. The whole point of them using the headset is to escape their real room for a little bit and kind of go off and do something fun, just like you're going out of your house to go somewhere else. And people have even complained that sometimes their Quest boots into mixed reality when they didn't want it to. They want to stay in home. So I think for that use case, for people who want to toggle into VR, or just at any point when you want to toggle into VR, that's going to be where Meta wants to bring Horizon in. And as I said, it just doesn't seem to make sense to have this entirely separate Horizon Home application and Horizon if Meta is truly serious about trying to scale Horizon.
Yeah, and I'm so AKA Big Worm's comment here. Spatial social media is not what I want. Spatial computer first that can do social media. That makes sense. That little way of delineating between what these devices are capable of. And that formed a little bit of my last little, like, trying to understand how this is going to work. And while you were talking, it kind of made sense to me. It snapped. It clicked into place. You put the headset on, and you could have these floating windows of a call, an avatar floating in your space. But it's just their face, right, in a window. And you could have a lot of experiences that way where people in these floating avatar window forms could go on a lot of immersive journeys with you. Like, they could be over your shoulder in this windowed form. What we also want is to have the full avatar appear, like basically to invite them into your space for to look around at all the stuff in your Horizon Home. So in that instance, you could move from a call to a visit in a pretty fluid way. But the call probably begins in pass-through mode, right? And I think that's probably the way it's going to happen over on Apple as well.
I just don't see why you'd want to have a rectangular view to someone's avatar. Why wouldn't you just use a video call for that? The point of VR is that are embodied together in a physical space with a shared coordinate space that fantastic. I can hand you an object and we can do things in the space together and play games and interact.
Sure. So it's such a fascinating question to think about all the different modes of connection. Are there situations where you're using your Quest 3 and I'm using a Quest 3 and we're just using Discord to talk to each other about our relative experiences in these two different places, or is there any value to us also being represented on like a call in space to each other so that we can like see each other's expressions or anything like that? Are we just going to be relegated to Discord connections when we're off on our own worlds? Is that how it's going to be?
That's an interesting question. I wasn't really thinking about that. What happens when you're wanting to do two entirely separate things and just call together? I guess, yeah, is the answer to that. You know, today you can do that with a party chat on Quest. And as people are pointing out in the comments, you know, if you do invite someone to a party and you're in home, you will see their avatar with you in home. But to my point earlier, there's nothing you can do. You can't actually do anything in Quest Home together. It's completely functionless. I've said before, what I want out of a VR home environment is actual things to do. I want to have a shared YouTube window where we can cast videos just like we're in a real space together. I want a shared music player. I want a chessboard. I want to be able to play card games together and board games and maybe a little mini golf in the corner, just, you know, a very, very simple version. The thing is, Meta could spend all this time building out Horizon Home to add all these features, or they could just utilize the fully interactive, customizable platform they've already spent billions of dollars to make, Horizon Worlds. If they're, and that, you know, the point I keep kind of repeating, it, but it just seems so strange to me, is if you're going to take all this effort to shove it into people's faces anyway, why not shove it around them? You know, if this is going to happen, go all the way. Don't have
well,
to.
I think
let us choose or don't.
No, I mean, I think that's ultimately like what I think David is doing here is he's not like, I don't want you to get guilty, like get in trouble for giving Meta ideas. What you're doing is pointing where the puck is going, right? You're telling us what the next steps are obviously going to be, right?
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's on your point of Discord, we have seen some of the firmware sleuths notice references to Discord within Meta's firmware. We obviously saw Discord come to Xbox. I think I'm right about that. I think it was Xbox rather than PlayStation. You know, we've seen that obviously Discord is willing to do these kind of platform level integrations. I think we've also seen Meta start to do more platform integrations. For example, recently we reported that there is a closed beta for seeing YouTube live comments in headset for YouTube streamers. So Meta is not limiting itself to its own platform. I think we could definitely potentially in the next few years see literally Discord come so that when you're not together, you are calling each other. But I do think it's a shame to do that. I think if you're in VR with someone and your friend is in VR, take that opportunity and play something together, you know?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's such a rare thing. I mean, I guess that's the point. It would be such a rare thing to even imagine syncing up like that. But like, I want to play Walkabout. You want to play Beat Saber? We should be able to chat together pretty easily. Jorg Jorgensen's comment, having someone join over your shoulder means that camera view has to be rendered somewhere. The last thing I want my mobile VR headset doing is using resources to render VR views for other people. Fantastic, obvious point there. But that is kind of the value of the Horizon platform ultimately, isn't it, David?
Yeah, technically, if you're doing this, so if you wanted to do that with other apps, with any app, as is mentioned by the commenter, you would have to A, ship an SDK and require each developer to do that, and B, render this unique third eye, essentially, that is not even sharing any of the views of the other eyes. So it would be far less efficient. And yeah, that would be a drain on your battery. It would lower your performance. It would mean, you know, dynamic resolution would have to clock down. It's a really, really awkward idea. But if you're in a managed online, inherently online platform like Horizon, you can spin up camera views as virtual headless clients in Meta's cloud servers. You know, that view can be done arbitrarily off your device because everything you're doing in Horizon Worlds, and this goes for VR chat and it goes for Rec Room and Roblox, all of that is inherently networked. You just have to add another virtual headless client. That's a fascinating thing we haven't really seen explored yet, but it's something I imagine one of these platforms is going to support. Technically, you can kind of already do that in a really hacky way by joining as a 2D PC client on VRChat and Rec Room. And I think Horizon even supports that under the hood because Meta's used it a few times. But what would be great is to see that as something that's built into the UI. So I spin up a virtual camera. That camera exists in Meta's cloud. It's another client in the space. And then I can stream what I'm doing in third person to the rest of the world, or as you say, directly to a friend.
Yeah, a little scampy even mentioning this other iteration of ways you might want to connect. Sometimes I want to talk to friends that play 2D games. That's even another scenario to imagine where it would be cool to have those friends watching them and, like, you know, seeing your friend winning at football over here in this window is kind of a cool concept to imagine. Other than like watching the big NFL game, you could actually watch your friend play their game over in your window. It's a cool concept that we could be in for in the next few years. I think we're ready to talk about the next subject.
The last thing I say is I wonder if Valve will use their Steam remote play system where you can kind of remotely play the same game together to do this. It would be amazing to, you know, the ideal I want is I want to be able to sit next to my friend's avatar while we're either doing a pass the controller or pass the virtual controller to play rounds of a game, just like we're sitting in the real room together, or split screen, except obviously you don't have to split the screen. You can give us two virtual monitors right beside each other. So really it's more of a LAN party together in virtual space. I think so much of this is just so unexplored. We saw in the most basic way, Oculus Arcade back on Gear VR, where you'd play arcade games. I want to see a networked Oculus Arcade. You know, yes, there are apps that do that unofficially on PC, but I want to see that built into a standalone headset. Again, it just comes back to how much of a missed opportunity the home space is. There are so many amazing things that you could have people do together with zero friction by just joining a party. And again, Horizon Home does nothing. There is zero functionality. It is literally just you're together as avatars in a 3D space. And what a shame.
Yeah, fantastic. I really loved you going full circle back to Steam. And I think that goes to some of my discussion about if you bring Steamworks and that whole platform really into VR properly, the whole upgrade to 2 in a standalone form factor, it you get some really interesting things that devs could maybe pull off over time. Let's talk about Meta CTO saying that they asked Google to bring the Play Store to Quest, and Google said no. That's not the whole story, because that's only what Andrew Bosworth has said in his AMA. What other context do you think might be out there, David?
Yeah, this is a fascinating one, and you should read the story on Upload VR for the full quote. But yeah, we don't have Google's response here yet. We did reach out to Google, and if we get a response that adds more context, we'll add it. The possible context here is that if you're an Android phone or tablet maker and you want the Google Play Store on your device, in some regions, such as Europe, you have to pay a per device license fee, and you also have to accept a bunch of terms from Google about pre-installing their apps and certain ways that you will conform your device to Google's requirements. If you're an iPhone user that has no idea what we're talking about, the Google Play Store is the App Store on Android, just in case. Because I have actually had conversations with people who they say, what do you mean the Play Store? Just to be clear. So if Meta could get the Play Store on Quest, you would have access to all of the 2D apps that run on Android phones and tablets within Quest. And if you're not aware, Quest actually does support sideloaded Android apps. You can sideload a bunch of popular Android apps, but it doesn't support those that require Google Play services. Because as well as the Google Play Store, Google has this kind of runtime framework thing that's, you know, arguably getting bigger and bigger every year and encompassing more and more of Android's functionality that is Google Play services. And so that comes with Google Play Store. If you want to license Google Play Store, you get the services. And a lot of the top Android apps are completely dependent on the frameworks and APIs within Google Play services. So if you try to sideload these apps on Quest, they will just crash on launch. So this is obviously going to be potentially Meta's biggest weakness in the long term of the XR industry, because simultaneously, we saw Apple a few months ago confirm that nearly all iPad and iPhone apps will run on Vision Pro day one, not sideloaded, but directly from the App Store. You open the App Store on Vision Pro, you can bring all of your favorite apps that you use on your iPad or on your iPhone straight into a spatial interface and place them around you while also using augmented reality apps that support the shared space. That is a radically different software proposal than what we've seen from Meta. Meta's 2D app support is currently that there are two 2D Android apps on the Quest store, Messenger and WhatsApp, Meta's own. Andrew Bosworth claims that any developer can come along and publish a 2D Android app, but I think it's very strange that none has. There are another category of 2D apps available on the Quest store, such as Adobe Acrobat and LastPass, and those are progressive web apps. And if you don't know what that is, it's basically like a web app that you can download and has some limited offline functionality. It's become quite popular in recent years. It's something that Chromebooks pushed heavily, but people tend to still prefer true native apps. And yeah, like I said, if we're in this situation where Apple has these native iPad and iPhone apps, where the headset that Google is working on with Samsung and Google is providing the software presumably will have Play Store, so it will have Android apps, Meta could be this third option that doesn't have these native 2D apps that people want. And what I said in this article is this could be a huge, huge problem for Meta in the long run. Potentially Meta's huge expansive library of immersive apps can make up for this in the short term and maybe even in the long term. But you know, if we get to the situation in 5 or 10 years where your choice is between the Vision OS platform, Google XR platform, and Meta, those first two, you can have all of your existing Android apps, even the ones you've paid for, because these are the same platforms and there's cross-buy available. Whereas with Meta, you're going to be relegated to web apps. And we've seen this happen before with Chromebooks, where they didn't have the native apps that people wanted. And, you know, Chromebooks did very well in education, where administrators are buying these things for $200 each, but they completely tanked in the consumer market. We also saw another situation of what happens when people don't get the apps they want with Windows Phone, where, you know, the number one reason people said that they either returned or didn't buy a Windows Phone was it didn't have the apps they want. This isn't a one-to-one situation because we're talking about 2D apps here, whereas immersive apps are their own category of thing, and Meta is inarguably the leader for immersive apps by far, but it's still, it comes down to how important will floating 2D apps be to XR headsets? If they are vital and if they are something that people are buying these headsets for as one of the primary reasons, Meta's pretty screwed unless they can come up with a Hail Mary.
Well, in a Hail Mary is an interesting way to frame it. So you did this write-up about this very recently, and I tried to break down and understand where things were going with the progressive web apps in particular. At the same time that you're describing this as an advantage for Google and Apple in competition with Meta, there's potential for Meta to watch what Google and Apple do and find a fresh new way to present, I would think, web-based web pages around you in various apps in a great new way. And I'm thinking of, you know, all across every experience right now, all we want is YouTube in a floating window in front of us. We've seen various examples of people walking into stores or cooking over a meal in the kitchen, using this exact instance of a YouTube floating window, and it's not easy to do. There's like the user interface is just miserable for setting up and using this stuff. If you could easily in midair resize a window and have this one float around and follow you and have two more that are easily done, I don't know that they necessarily need to have iPad apps that are built for specific screen sizes and Android apps that are buggy at a million different screen sizes. Like, there's a pathway that Meta could actually succeed at this with a fresh start rather than having to adapt all their old things from these old platforms. So at the same time that you're describing it as like they could be in trouble, this could actually be a huge benefit if they're able to bring the full power of the web around you into your immersive experiences.
Sure, but I think Samsung and Google's headset and Apple's headset will probably also support progressive web apps. So it's not going to be a unique advantage to Meta. It just comes down to, as you say, I think all of these platforms are going to solve the letting you resize and position windows in your pass-through space within the next, you know, 3 to 5 years. That's just a UX problem. We saw, you know, when Android phones launched, and again, I'm saying this as someone who used Android phones for many years and still does. I use a Pixel phone today. They were their UX was pretty terrible, and iPhone kind of just felt smoother and better. Again, I was someone who chose the Android phones. I'm not hating. It's just it was the case. But over time, we saw these platforms essentially converge. If you take a flagship Android phone and an iPhone today, they are almost an identical experience from a UX perspective. There's no massive difference anymore. I think we'll see that happen in spatial computing as well. And, you know, that was Apple copying Android and Android copying Apple. They each copied the best features and aspects of each other until they've converged today where it would be hard to, you can't buy a bad smartphone anymore. If you walk into any store and you buy a smartphone, it's going to be a great experience because of that decades of refinement in this massive market. I think that won't be a huge problem. It will come down to, I think, the app support. You know, it just is. Yes, people are using the web for more and more these days. Yes, you know, you can have YouTube and all of these platforms that support web-based apps. Google always used to cite that thing when they were marketing Chromebooks of like, what was it, 80% of PC time is spent in Chrome anyway or something like that. But the problem is that 20%, or even if it's 10% or 5%, where you want to bring out a real application, you know, where you're trying to do a workflow or a kind of setup that requires a piece of software that just isn't available on this, but is available over on your Vision Pro or your Samsung Galaxy headset or whatever they call it. Again, it's very, very hard to tell what'll happen. And I don't think it's PWAs that we'll see of Meta if it is. I think it could be that maybe apps that are built for spatial computing and virtual and augmented environments may end up utilizing that space better and being far more useful than, as you say, apps that were designed for a rectangular screen that sits in a tiny window in front of you. It's possible that this will have a kind of forging effect that forces developers to take advantage of the space. But again, I think that will probably still happen on Vision OS and Google XR.
Yeah, a lot to think about when we see improved hand tracking, right? A lot of near field things become more feasible the better the hand tracking gets at accurate at detecting really, really tiny movements.
I think it's comfort.
The last thing I think I want to leave on the Meta CTO comment, right? This is only half the story. We did reach out to Google to see if they had anything to add here. Very unlikely that they're going to say anything. But this is a rare instance where a company has said something about a competitor or even a partner, right? And that's, it points to like under behind the scenes discussions that are probably progressing between both of these companies. When we get to this final subject on Pico, I think we might come back to this a little bit and discuss what benefit is there to Meta and Google finding common ground and supporting one another in competition for what's coming. But that's, yeah, we'll come back to that shortly. Let's talk about this Apple comment next.
Yeah, so we have three pieces of Apple news to talk about today. The first one is just this comment from Tim Cook, who said, let me just bring up, he was basically asked during an earnings call whether Apple Vision Pro's launch would be similar to AirPods or Apple Watch. And what he said was very interesting. He said, there's never been a product like Vision Pro. And so we're purposely bringing it out in our stores only so we can really put a great deal of attention on the last mile of it. We'll be offering demos in the stores and it will be very different kind of process than the normal grab and go kind of process. And so previously, Bloomberg's Mark Gurman has reported that what Apple plans to do is have these entire Vision Pro sections of its store where people can have these demos, and by appointment, perhaps, they can actually have a custom fitting where Apple figures out, you know, what is the right size of facial interface? What's the right size of headband? What are the prescription lenses that you need? And so this is kind of a very light version of the approach that Big Screen took, where they actually, you know, ship you a headset that was custom built for your fit. Apple isn't going that far yet. Perhaps that's something Apple could explore in the far future. But what Apple does seem to be doing is saying, you know, we don't just want to sell these things and have people guess what is the right fitting. We want to make sure this thing, if you're paying $3,500 at minimum for this, we want to make sure it is the most comfortable possible experience. And so we're going to bring you into the store. We're going to give you a demo. We're going to measure your head and figure out what is the right strap size, what is the right facial interface size. And that makes sense because, you know, we've seen Mark Gurman also report that some of the early testers of Vision Pro have found it too heavy for extended use. You know, despite the fact that the battery is offloaded into this tethered battery pack, it's still made, you know, this thing is still made of metal and glass. It is a arguably not the best weight optimized choice of materials, but it does give obviously a very premium look and feel, and obviously may have advantages for things like thermal distribution. We've also heard from reports that Apple is going to heavily focus on the size and weight of the product for future versions. But for now, it sounds like they're going to take you into the Apple store and do everything they can to make sure you get the most comfortable fit for this current version.
Yeah, I'm thinking in particular about Spaces. This was a company that had locations in various places. They had done projects with various companies, but they had a location at the Irvine Spectrum. If anyone has ever seen it, it's a shopping mall down in Southern California, right in the heart of where Oculus actually started. So it would have been the nearest mall to the Oculus headquarters back in the day. Has an Apple store. I want to say they also had a Microsoft store, but this was one of those premier shopping destinations. And it had a VR location in sort of this corner spot from Spaces. And you went in there and they had worked out the whole queue, the whole flow for you to sign in at the front desk, to go in and get trackers put on your whole body, and then put on a headset and go into a Terminator experience. I think it was Terminator Salvation it might have been based off of. But it even had like floor haptics. They had built some kind of they had built the whole experience like you're on the top of a building, but they were using some kind of a floor to vibrate the floor and move it around as well. In addition to this, the whole flow of the whole experience reminded me of an Apple store. There's a beautiful Apple store in the same mall, and it's just a few feet away is this Spaces startup that had built a whole flow, but it was the clunkiest VR hardware. The whole, like, they had worked out everything to be as good as it could, but then you got to actually put on this headset and it was a giant headset with a whole bunch of trackers to do full body tracking. And it was not great. Obviously, Spaces, I think, got bought by Apple. And the interesting thing is the other thing Spaces ended up doing right before they got bought was they built chat windows. So you could chat in, you could chat from VR to a Zoom meeting, effectively working out the connection from talking from VR to the real world or to like an outside of VR platform. And that was what they had built right before they got acquired by Apple. I wanted to leave that little bit of context there before we jump into this next subject.
Yeah, we often talk about Apple's advantage from its custom chips. We often talk about Apple's advantage from its ecosystem integration with all of your devices from Apple working together essentially seamlessly. But the other advantage that doesn't get talked about enough for Apple is this chain of stores, this thing that was built up since, you know, roughly around the launch of the original iPod or so, where no other company has what Apple has here. They have the ability. It's just so well suited for VR and AR. It's so well suited for headsets and glasses eventually to be able to go into a physical store where you can A, try and see what this is really like, because the magic of VR and AR is often impossible to convey over 2D marketing on your existing screens. So A, it's a marketing system in itself. B, it's a way to get the best fit because, you know, if you, everyone has their own choice of which headband they like on Quest. Some people like the default strap. Some people like the Elite strap. Some people like many of the, you know, one of the dozen different third-party straps. Imagine you had a store you could have walked into and just tried this all out for your Quest and seen, you know, is it even worth buying? Is this something I want? Does it feel comfortable on my face? Does it work well, you know, with my eye shape and, or sorry, my head shape and my eyes? That's something that's going to be, I think, a massive advantage.
Yeah.
I think you're going to walk through a mall or and look into an Apple store and see this constantly, people trying on Vision Pro and amazed. And it's just, we saw Meta build like a test of this. They built one Meta store where they had Quest demos and they had even like a mixed reality view that you could see from behind. So you could see the person playing Beat Saber on the giant immersive wall. And we speculated at the time, you know, is this a trial of something that Meta wants to build out? Do they too recognize how vital this could be for headsets and glasses? No, it was just a trial.
Yeah, right. And it's weird when you talk to these executives or these people in charge and you start talking about like these broader issues that you think about when you see these trials, right? At the end of the day, Tim Cook, obviously more aware of this than almost anyone out there, the Apple Store footprint is a huge advantage. It's always been a huge, huge advantage. And it goes back to like Steve Jobs days where he saw the way that people were demoing his products that he worked on with all these other engineers and was like disgusted by it. And that's what led to the Apple stores being what they are, their own presentation of their products. And I'm seeing in our comments this being fleshed out, where if you are a VR owner who owned a headset made by anyone, anywhere, you had a miserable experience demoing that product to friends. You did not have a great experience. And the reason I'm on the record multiple times in this show is I went through the demo that Apple offered, and hands down, it was the greatest technology demo of my lifetime, simply because I walked into a room, they told me to do things, and the headset did them. From the outside, they sat there watching what I was doing from a tablet. All these things that Meta has had to build one at a time, one buggy edition after one buggy edition, they had just flowing out of the box for this first time experience for me. And what we've heard is that Meta gave executives or like did a roving test of giving this to a lot of people internally, right? Before I went and saw this demo. Now they're giving the demos to a bunch of developers, getting them excited in these different developer labs around the world. If you go into an Apple store and have this experience, it's the experience that Meta should have had 5 years ago. It's the, you know, like all of these things, the streaming to outside, this. So I don't think I really included this necessarily, but one of the things that was supposed to happen was a butterfly was supposed to land on my fingertip during the demo. It did not. It floated by and then it floated away and it didn't actually stop to do the landing. The demo didn't do what it was supposed to in that instance, but it didn't break enough to take me out of VR, as is the case in so many other instances. And what I wanted to like fit with that is this was just the intro experience. This was a non-content based experience. This was, let's show you what a FaceTime call looks like in VR. Let's show you what resizing a window is. Let's just make the interface itself delightful and easy for you to use. And it's astonishing how missing that has been across the board from anyone else.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the Rift and Touch areas, the original Oculus Rift and its touch controllers, Meta's Facebook at the time set up a lot of demos in stores like Best Buy and other retailers. But because this is something that is so detached from them, where they've subcontracted one company to subcontract another company, they just lose that control over quality that Apple gets by doing this all in-house. And I've heard, you know, I've heard some horror stories of just how terrible some of those demos were and how, you know, the sensors were pointing the wrong way. So positional tracking wasn't even working. And, you know, the person who did the demo didn't even do it themselves. So they don't actually know what's supposed to be happening. Just things that when you have your own store, you can easily kind of solve by having this all, that these are people that you're training from your own first party company, not relying on subcontractors. And when you talk about the first experience you get when you put on the headset, it's also a shame that Quest 3's is just so much worse than what you had on Quest 2, which is, in my opinion, slightly worse than what was there on Rift and Touch. And even, I remember when you put on the original Oculus Rift, you wanted this Dream Deck experience that at the time, you know, there wasn't controllers yet. So the whole point was just to show you the different types of scenes that VR could do and the kind of immersion it could make you feel. And, you know, it was incredible. Everyone who you put in Dream Deck as a demo walked away and said, wow, that's incredible. That's absolutely incredible. You had the same kind of thing for Touch when you had the first contact experience in that little RV with the all of the hand interactions you could do. And over time, that magic was just slowly lost. And as I ranted about in a recent show, Meta, you know, fired most of the team that were behind some of those amazing Nux experiences. The Quest 3 one, it's not terrible, but it just doesn't feel like it has the same magic. You know, you're just in, it's just shooting little balls through a wall. There's no kind of narrative to it. There's no slowly being introduced to the controllers and VR without even realizing that you're doing it. And I think that's the magic of the best new user experiences, where they teach you the magic of the platform and how to use the controllers and all the features without you ever realizing that what you've just done is a tutorial.
Yep. Fantastic description. And it's devastating that that isn't it, that it's like deteriorated on the meta side of things. It's such a horrible, like I remember showing, it's one of their experimental experiences to friends saying, hey, this is a headset without controllers. You can just put your hands in it. And it just made them even more confused than if not because of just how experimental it all felt to use. Let's talk about this last Apple subject, because I think all of this is going to tie together when we get into that Pico
there's
subject.
Two more
when we get
to discuss for Apple here. We
have three Apple subjects. Oh man.
Yeah. Let's speed through it quite quickly though. One of them isn't something we can talk about for long. So last week we talked about how, there was a report from The Information that Apple had dropped full body tracking from the Vision Pro launch a few years ago. By all accounts, that's still true, but there's a new report from Mark Gurman that says that they are still working on it and it is expected to happen at some point post-launch. It will not require a future headset. It should work on Vision Pro, but it won't be there at launch, but it may be one of the major software updates. Maybe that's a year in, maybe it's 6 months in. We don't know that, but what we do know is that out of the box at launch, Apple Vision Pro will not have body tracking, but at some point in its lifetime, it is expected that Apple will be able to launch that. And they're still working to perfect it. They obviously have very high standards. We know that in December, Meta plans to release upper body tracking for Quest 3, but Apple's body tracking will reportedly include the full body, including your legs, thanks to those downward facing cameras and the massive machine learning performance of the M2 chipset. So it'll be fascinating to see if they can pull this off. The use case that Gurman reports they are targeting is fitness apps. So if you watch the WWDC introduction of Vision Pro, you'll notice that that was the big missing category. There was nothing where the person was actively moving around. In fact, in very few of the demos for Vision Pro, did you even see the person standing up? So there was no active movement. Gurman's suggesting that that's because Apple doesn't want to do this before they have body tracking. And so that, I would imagine, hypothetically, you know, a year into Vision Pro, Apple says, here is the Vision OS 2.0 or whatever they're going to call it. We now have Apple Fitness Plus and all of these third-party fitness apps that you love and full body tracking. Look at what we've done.
Yeah, and why don't you just run to that last subject so we can get into the big one here at the end.
Yeah, so the last piece of news is something that we've just reported on today. South Korea's ET News, which is a news outlet that we have reported on their claims before, is reporting that Apple is working on a next-generation battery that could be used in its products after 2025, including its future Vision headsets. So this has apparently been a project that has been ongoing since at least 2018. We should give the context here that Apple spends more on research and development than pretty much any company in the world. They spend $30 billion a year on R&D, and this battery project is apparently one of their big projects. It apparently spun out of their Apple Car project, which is, you know, probably the least likely to ship Apple R&D project. But out of the huge pressures of energy density and charging speed of cars, they have apparently developed a battery that could in the second half of this decade.
David, I need that car.
I don't think it's going to ship, but that's a separate topic. The point here is that if Apple can develop this custom next generation battery, that they could leapfrog a lot of their competitors for not only their mobile devices, but their headsets. And this is something where, you know, everyone today that's making a consumer electronics product is using the same batteries. You know, LG Chem is one of the producers, and there's some other companies. But look at what Apple did with chipsets. It said, we're going to make our own, and we're going to make them so much better that they're going to deliver laptops that last twice as long as other people's laptops and perform, you know, twice as fast. If they can do this with batteries, that's going to be a game changer for all of these mobile products. And obviously, headsets is one of the ones where this is going to be so, so important, because Apple Vision Pro is promising only 2 hours of battery despite this external battery pack. That's because VR and AR is a battery challenge like nothing else. You're constantly sampling input from a dozen sensors, constantly running at high resolution and high refresh rate while you're rendering 3D objects constantly at high resolution and refresh rate. It is a huge pressure on the chip. That's why they all have to be actively cooled, and a huge pressure on the battery. And, you know, it's one of the core complaints about people. If Apple can do this, if you can get a Vision Pro 3 or whatever it happens to ship that has, you know, twice the battery life of any of its competitors, that is going to be a breakthrough moment for the entire headset and glasses industry.
Yeah. So we'll obviously watch battery advancements, but it is one of those things you see in the news and then it blips out and never pops up. It is, when you're talking fundamental chemistry at the scale needed to supply everyone's pocket everywhere or on everyone's head everywhere, it's hard to do anything like that. But we will obviously see what comes of it. I'm ready to talk about this. What else do you want to talk about before we move off Apple? I don't want to talk about Apple anymore.
Just wanted to repeat your caveat there so our viewers are very clear that R&D projects like this, research and development project like this, could never ship. They could be watered down. Maybe Apple could ship it and 6 months later, a competitor ships the exact same thing. This is very speculative. Just like when we talk about Meta's long-term research, this is something that is Apple's long-term research. So yes, let's finally talk about that Pico news.
Yeah, right before we jump into it here, I just want to say thank you to our members for supporting us in the work that we do. You allow us, give us the room to go out and ask hard questions to try to get our answers as often as we can. So just want to say thank you to there. And then also just like and share this link out as we dive into this Pico subject. So let's see here. This has been building for quite some time. David, why don't you summarize where we are? Because I basically came into the studio from writing a draft of our latest report on Pico. And I think I'll get that published sometime in the next 2 hours. We're going to exit the studio to go publish that piece. But I'll give you a summary of what's in that piece and where we are right now with our report. But first, I want David to recap where we are right now.
Yeah, so this started with a Tencent Technology News report that Pico was conducting these huge wide-scale layoffs. And, you know, they said that they are expected to affect more than 1,000 employees, bringing Pico's workforce down to just hundreds from its peak of around 2,000. And so we reached out to ByteDance, and ByteDance confirmed to us that layoffs were taking place, though they denied that it affected more than 1,000 staff, and they declined to say exactly how many were affected. Reuters today, independently of Tencent Technology News, reported that Pico was laying off hundreds of employees. So what's clear is that this is maybe not more than half of the staff like was initially expected, but it is still a massive, massive layoff of hundreds of staff and a radical restructure. That's ByteDance's direct word of Pico. So this is the statement that ByteDance gave to us. And if you're not familiar, ByteDance is the Chinese tech giant behind TikTok. And in 2021, they acquired Pico. Pico being this kind of Chinese VR headset startup, which actually shipped a standalone headset a year before Oculus Go that was very similar to Oculus Go. So Pico, while it's often seen as a copycat, and it's, you know, we've pointed out that Pico has very much so copied a lot of Meta's moves and interface and strategy, it actually does have some of its own original DNA that goes a bit before that. So, you know, it's not as easy as just calling it a Chinese copycat. It has its own original ideas. It has done its own original stuff. But I think, as we'll discuss later, maybe some of its downfall has been that in recent years it has been copying Meta. But here's that statement from ByteDance. We frequently assess our business needs and make adjustments to strengthen our organization and better align our teams with company goals. As a result, we have decided to restructure the Pico business to focus more on hardware and core technologies.
All right. Let's see where to start here. I want my heart to go out to anyone who has worked in a remote company and has had that company become difficult to work in. That's the experience of reaching out to like companies that are in our space now and talking to the employees who are working there. I've described this to other developers. I know the developers out there have experienced this. I know David Heaney has experienced this. Remote working means sitting in a room by yourself most of the time, and during brief contact with other people, it's usually your own voice echoing off the walls that you hear. And I think that's the context you have to think about being an employee at Pico for. This is people, these are people working from home, trying to make things happen. And then they've got to get all of their deals approved through their parent company, through China, and get their games approved for the Pico platform, or roll out store updates, or roll out updates to the platform across multiple regions. I've only heard horror stories from devs almost across the gamut from every major company out there, right? You go down Google, funding a bunch of games for Daydream and then immediately pulling the plug. You go to Meta, which has this recent situation of mixed reality games that might not actually be catching on. There's only a handful of them. You have these multiple situations over the years of devs having a tough time working with their platform overlords. And what I don't understand right now with Pico is, what is the prospect for devs who want to reach Pico's market? And that's why I called out very early in the show, 2%. 2% of the PCVR market is what Pico has been able to achieve with the Pico 4 in a year, roughly on par with a headset that Meta hasn't sold for 3 years now, over 3 years. So 1 year of effort with a headset that David Heaney has personally reported is a great device to have for your PC VR needs. And they could only get 2% of the market in competition with Meta. And that is before the Quest 3 even really shows up on the charts in any significant way with a next generation processor. So Pico 4 and Quest 2 for the last year, and other Pico headsets for before then, were competing head to head with the same processor, the XR2 Gen 1. And it could only achieve 2% of the market versus Meta having 40%. And here is the Quest 3 ready to like make the cycle even more dramatically against Pico's, I don't know how Pico competes with that. David, why don't you explain before I go off on this a little bit more?
So, I mean, I do want to add a few pieces of context that I think kind of defend Pico a bit here, because we have to acknowledge that the major limitation to Pico was that it didn't arrive in North America. North America, you know, the United States mostly, and also Canada, is the primary market for VR. It's Meta's home turf. It's where a huge, huge percentage of VR developers are. It's where a huge, huge percentage of VR YouTubers and influencers are. Without being in North America, this was never going to be able to compete with Quest on market share. And as you say, 1 year, the Quest platform has been around for more than 4 years. And if you consider it to be an extension of the original Oculus standalone platform from Go, 5 years. I think had Pico launched in North America and had it had a little bit more momentum and a little bit more time, we could have seen something that could compete more directly. You know, you said, I said it was a good PC VR piece of hardware. It's also an excellent standalone headset. It is a great piece of hardware. The limit at the launch was this lack of content and a lot of the kind of platform features missing, but Pico have done a really remarkable job at porting a huge percentage of the Quest Store content over to Pico. I point this out constantly, but I don't think Americans realize just how much of Quest's content is on Pico. If you open the Pico store, it's massive. The problem, of course, is that none of the exclusives are there. Obviously, you don't get Beat Saber, you don't get Onward, you don't get Population 1, you don't get Resident Evil 4, you won't get Asgard's Wrath 2, you won't get Assassin's Creed Nexus. And that's where I'm really puzzled. Why, if ByteDance wanted to compete, ByteDance is one of the richest companies in the world. It has a money printing machine, TikTok, just like Meta is operating on its money printing machine, Facebook and Instagram. It's startling to me that they would take such a short-term view. And, you know, we've seen a potentially leaked internal email from Pico's head about how they, you know, growth wasn't as fast as they expected. Did they really expect that after 1 year of just launching in Europe and only being halfway through the process of getting the content they wanted, that they were going to take on Quest? They, you know, they announced one major exclusive, Just Dance VR, and we've heard nothing about it since. But they needed more exclusives. They should have gone to developers and said, here's $10 million, build us a great exclusive title. They should be doing, arguably, they should be doing more than that. They should have done what Meta did and just go out and buy studios and get content built. They could have gone to some of the original VR development studios that Meta has quite neglected and given them money. You know, Cloudhead Games, the developer of Pistol Whip has often said that, you know, they are just sitting there with a massive talent pool in terms of the experience that all of their employees have building VR, waiting for someone to come along and give them, you know, a grant to build an incredible AAA title. I just don't understand how Pico thought this was going to go and why they would, after such a short time and not making the right moves, be so surprised that they're not a Quest competitor. But to come back just for the last thing I'll say for now on the North America thing, I don't think that was really their fault. You know, reportedly the issue here is that ByteDance didn't want to stir the pot when it came to the US regulatory oversight of TikTok. You know, so many of the US regulators, from my understanding, are looking to TikTok and trying to come up with plausible reasons for a ban and talking about some of the potential influences of the Chinese government and some of the potential negative influences on teenagers. And if in the middle of that you say, oh, and we're going to ship a hardware device in the US that has 5 cameras on it and a microphone and, you know, can capture your movement data and all of these other privacy concerns that are brought up about VR headsets, that would have been a real distraction. But, you know, I'm not familiar with the political situation, but are we not past that point now? Are they not able to dip their toes into the US market?
It's election season, right? I mean, when the United States enters an election period, all social and cultural and legal norms are thrown to the wind as they become fodder for the candidates to discuss how those things should change when they're in office. Let me go through this specific where we are now with ByteDance. So we reached out to ByteDance again, and I hit them with a very specific set of questions. And I'll get to my questions after I give you what ByteDance said. So ByteDance said, Pico will continue to operate normally and provide its users with top-notch services. Pico users can continue to access the games and content available on Pico. And Pico will continue to invest in hardware core technologies and enhance the user experience of current and new consumers. Those are pretty vague statements, and they were in response to very specific questions that I put to them. The first question was, is the Just Dance game canceled? So I got this very vague statement in response to the very concrete question, is the biggest game that you've announced for your platform, the biggest exclusive, the only exclusive, ultimately at this point, the only big exclusive, I guess we'll put it that way, that you've announced for your platform, is it still in existence? And is it still going to come to your headset? I think you know, they didn't comment on it. They didn't respond. And if anyone wants to get into how that compares to Meta and Grand Theft Auto in a few minutes, we can. But Meta, yeah, we'll get into that in a second. I want to talk about ByteDance first. So, Meta, ByteDance would also only confirm to us that they were doing layoffs and they wanted to disagree with the original reporting out of China that about the scale of the layoffs. Yet, they will not tell you, they will not tell us how many people are actually getting laid off. That's a pretty bogus thing to do, to say, actually, it's not in the thousands, but we can't tell you how many hundreds are actually getting laid off. And these are employees in Europe and United States that are losing their jobs during these cuts as Pico figures out what the hell it's doing over the next few years. It doesn't, you know, how do you engender trust in your platform while at the same time not actually telling how many people you laid off? I don't, though, that's one thing that doesn't compute for me. And that idea of it just being the first exclusive is the first of several questions, right? Why should someone buy a Pico 4 now? Is there a new Pico headset coming next year powered by the XR2 Gen 2? And will developers be removing their games from release on Pico's platform? If you're a developer with answers to any of those questions, obviously reach out to uploadvr.com. We don't want to, you know, pretend that there's a fire when it's just smoke. But we're asking really tough questions of just, why should anyone buy your headset? Why should anyone put their app on your platform? What about the developers that have put their apps on your platform already? Are they supported for years to come? Do they have a good future here? I'm not getting those answers yet. And Pico has a lot of work to do to get those answers in front of both developers and their community.
Yeah, I think for both developers and consumers, Pico needs to come out with a clear statement that explains what exactly is going to change in future. What are the reduced investments they're making in the short term? What should people expect to see? The answer we got, as you say, was just far too vague. It does not inspire confidence. If you're someone who wants to buy the headset for standalone purposes, like not just as a PC headset, I think based on this, until there's more information out, we would discourage purchasing that headset because we just don't know what's happening. It's possible that ByteDance's plan here, if I had to guess what's happening based on the information we've seen, based on the statements we've gotten, it looks like ByteDance's plan here is to scale down the short term and focus more on long-term things. You know, try to build towards what will the headsets of the second half of the decade that are popular in mass market look like, and build those rather than just try to compete in the current Quest-like market. And what we've been talking about in weeks before, when we talked about the fact that we've reported that Pico is shifting its content focus, or already was shifting its content focus, from controllers to hand tracking, is that we suspect, based on all of this information put together, that Pico is aiming towards Apple Vision Pro, not Meta Quest. And I think that's probably what will happen here. I think ByteDance will tell Pico, go build a Vision Pro competitor. Don't worry about this short-term VR stuff. Just go build a Vision Pro competitor and we'll worry about the content once we actually are able to do that.
Yeah, so this statement, Pico will continue to invest in hardware, core technologies, and enhance the user experience of current and new customers. There's a couple questions here from Little Scampy here in our comments. Isn't it in their best interest to not tell us and deny massive layoffs to protect their stock price? A couple misunderstandings there we'll get into. And then this other question, is porting really that difficult? Okay, so I want to take apart a couple of those questions there. Let's start with their interest, right? This is a Chinese-based company, China-based company, not listed on the public stock exchange in the United States. There's no public quarterly earnings to report. They don't have to answer to the public. in any normal way, shape, or form as a Western country. And in fact, like, they don't even have to follow Western cultural norms where you would like respond with a statement to a certain question. They're just operating by a completely different set of rules in a different country that, you know, what happens outside of what happens with Pico sales outside China is secondary to the core idea of just owning the market inside China, I would think, over the long term. And so it's one of these things where, like, people on Quest Pro or Quest 2 might feel outdated or like they're second-class citizens within Meta's ecosystem. Well, that's kind of what the worldwide market is to Pico in that same... I think that's an interesting way to think about the analogy. And then the little scampy question of, is porting really that difficult? So Geek Odin, developer of Virtual Desktop, says nothing has changed here from him as a developer, obviously out there on Pico with a very key app that's helping people. But porting and difficult is not a fair question. It's cost and long-term support that I have to think about there.
Yeah, and it's risk as well. So, you know, Geek Odin's app is this kind of continuous one app that will, you know, be purchased one off and receive updates over time. But what we mean when we talk about developer risk is if a developer is building an app today or a game today, they need to figure out what is the cost of supporting Pico in terms of just their, you know, assigning someone to make, to test that it works on the device, responding to all of the customer feedback and issues that are brought up for that app, coordinating with the Pico store. There are, even when OpenXR theoretically takes away a lot of the core software differences that are required to port, there are still these fundamental business costs to support different platforms. And for a developer that's building a game today, they need to say, is it worth risk going on this platform when I don't know, will this headset still be for sale in 6 months? Will there be a successor within a year or two? Or will the current user base fizzle out? Because if you do ship on a platform, not only do you have to support it on day one, you have an obligation to support your paying customers for years to come. And that can become something that has a lot more cost and benefit if you're supporting a dying platform. I'm not saying Pico is a dying platform, but I'm saying this is why Pico needs to come across and tell developers what is the status of the platform. Yes, they've given this vague idea of, you know, we will continue to improve the product, but just, you know, we need more concrete answers than that. I do think that, it, you know, in their defense, it is good that they give a reply at all. You know, it is good that they confirm that layoffs are happening. You know, they didn't try to deny it's happening at all. As you say, it is problematic that they would give a number. Meta has given a specific number.
To be clear, that was in response to reporters' questions, right? Like, this isn't, you know, they didn't put out a press release saying, you know, we're restructuring this. You know, this whole thing happened because reporters were sniffing around trying to figure out what's going on as this company shifts its strategy at a fundamental level and affects a lot of lives globally. So, like, you're right, you know, but at the same time, they're not, we can't give them the impression of being upfront about this at the same time.
Yeah, that is fair. And as we keep sort of harping on, the vagueness is a big problem. I want to talk about what I think could be a big issue with the... Well, first I'm going to respond to Vern Rock's question. Isn't Pico 5 due in April 2024? So there was this like fake spec sheet that went around on social media that was supposed to be Pico 5 and Pico 5 Pro and Pico 5 Pro Max. From everything I can ascertain, that was fan fiction, utterly fan fiction. Someone on a Chinese forum made it up and distributed it, and there was never any evidence that those specs were for an actual Pico product. The only new hardware we've seen from Pico since the release of Pico 4 is those controllers, those ringless controllers that have been prototyped. But even on the Chinese social media influencer who reportedly went to try it, it was still being used with the Pico 4 headset. It was just, as far as we can tell, an R&D project for now. It may be that their future controllers want to use that. But the thing I was going to talk about there was that Pico's problem, if they do want to just retreat to China over time, I'm not saying they will do that, but if they did, is that earlier this year, we picked up a report that suggested that Meta is planning to launch Quest in China and using Tencent as their partner. Now, Tencent is obviously another Chinese tech giant that is a competitor to ByteDance in some areas, you know, in some online social services. Interestingly, Tencent News is the company that reported this in the first place. So, you know, I wanted to point out in our article that it is a bit weird that this is a competitor reporting on the layoffs of their competitor. But Tencent partnered with Nintendo to bring the Switch to China. And how that works is that Nintendo provides the hardware and Tencent does all of the certification and approval of the software for it. And that's exactly how the Meta partnership would reportedly work. So Meta would provide the core software and hardware, whereas Tencent would actually manage a separate Quest store for China. If that happens, I think Pico's going to be in a lot of trouble. If they're not only unable to access Meta's home turf, but Meta is then streaming in its latest hardware into their home turf, that would be devastating for Pico.
Yeah, there's a sordid history of cross collaboration between China and the United States, like with reference designs like resembling each other, and then getting, you know, it's hard to figure out who actually built some of these core technologies. At the end of the day, Qualcomm is a engine of more than just the chips, right? Like in the early days, they were putting out reference kits that form the basis of a lot of these things across every region. But it's also been, to David's point, there's been some cross like pollination where Meta doesn't officially want to do business in China, but they still want to find ways to do business with China. And that's a tricky thing for them to actually accomplish. And I want to just, you keep using these ifs. You keep talking about if Pico is going to survive, if they're going to, like how do they regroup and come back from here? I'm remembering that Meta just changed its name in the last 2 years. I'm remembering that Vision Pro is this completely new product that just got announced this year but hasn't shipped. And Pico is known for like copying. You talked about this last half of the decade and Pico trying to go and focus on core research to get there. The lift, the investment needed to make the Apple experience we talked about earlier in this show, that demo that you can go into an Apple store and it just works, that investment is billions of dollars and years of software updates for any other company to match. And I had a hard time imagining it before. I have a much harder time imagining Pico getting there now. And I'm seeing a lot of people in our comments saying, like, actually, Vive is doing better in China than Pico in many ways. And some of the Chinese-based manufacturers are doing better than Pico. So maybe Pico dies is where I'm going with this. Like, what is, and even if it's in name only, why wouldn't ByteDance just spin up another company, a new name? What if Meta could toss out the name Oculus and find no value in it? Why can't Pico? Why can't ByteDance do the same with the Pico name?
Yeah, it's possible that ByteDance does that. I think when you look at what they're talking about with a restructure here, essentially that seems like it's going to be what happens. It sounds like they've decided to kind of go back to the drawing board and change their fundamental strategy with this company. I don't think they have the same need to kill off a brand that Oculus did. You know, ByteDance VR doesn't really have the same ring to it as Meta VR, though, as you say, there could be a massive
TikTok does.
Rebrand. Yeah, the TikTok brand could be fascinating. The TikTok view or whatever you want to call it. That's actually a very, very interesting idea. They could use the TikTok brand itself. Problem is, again, the place where the TikTok brand is strongest in the West is the United States. And if they can't solve that problem of getting into the US, that's going to be a huge, huge struggle. I mean, you know, there are Android phones today, like Huawei and Xiaomi, that survive by selling to pretty much everywhere else in the world than the US. The problem is that their strategy in many ways and what they ship huge units in, at least Xiaomi does, is at low cost. You know, Xiaomi ships phones at $150 or $200 to the developing world. Pico, It's weird that Pico went for such a high spec product. I do find that actually quite strange with Pico 4, you know, with these pancake lenses and high resolution displays and motorized displays, when, you know, it's been estimated that Pico is losing, or that ByteDance is losing $140 or so dollars on each Pico 4, or at least they were last year. I wonder if maybe their last ditch attempt could have or should have been a Pico 4 Lite, something that doesn't have dual displays, that doesn't have some of the fancier features like motorized lens separation, that tries to really hammer at Meta on what Quest 3 has failed at, which is cost. And yes, that's going to then run into Meta's Quest 3 Lite, but that seems to be a market that they would much better, you know, if people wanted the alternative, that if people, if they want to sell people the alternative that doesn't have Beat Saber and Population One and Resident Evil and et cetera, hammer them with cost, ship a product that is relentlessly designed to be as cheap as possible. And, you know, a lot of people are still going to buy that, just like people are going to buy the Quest 3 Lite potentially, if that becomes a thing, just like people bought Oculus Go, which was manufactured by a, you know, Chinese mass manufacturing at low cost company, Xiaomi.
Yeah. All right. So, and this gets to funding. This starts to bring us back to funding and vision. And I hate saying that like anyone is doing a good job of this before I get into saying like any, I don't want it to be said that like I'm praising Meta for making good funding decisions, but you've got a decade of evidence that Meta will show up with a check in hand to pay for a VR game getting made by people who show that they can do it. And at the same time, so the thing I alluded to earlier, but I skipped over, Pico was a no comment on this Just Dance game, the one game for their whole platform that they announced and made a bunch of buzz over coming, is a no comment. Now, Meta did the exact same thing to David Heaney and I in the same room with them, asking them what is up with Grand Theft Auto San Andreas on the Quest platform. No comment from two executives over at Meta. What makes these two situations different from one another is that Meta still has Asgard's Wrath 2 and Assassin's Creed Nexus coming out for the Quest 3 and Quest 2 this year, and that is just a fraction of the exclusive content that they are funding for their platforms and have been year in and year out. It's evidence of a long-term strategy that is bearing fruit. When you see 40% of the Steam VR users on PC are Quest 2, I think that's a sign of the multi-year content investment they're bearing out. And what you have at the end of the day is a last generation product. You have a Quest 2 with XR 2 Gen 1 old chip beating a headset that's priced competitively and features better technology in many ways, right? That's what, so hearing David talk about the China stuff and what might happen next year is really, really fascinating to think about the Fresnel lens technology. It's a fascinating thing, fascinating idea to think about Meta giving the Quest 3 Lite, if that should come to pass, letting that get sold back into China with a partner of some kind, and using the Quest 3 Lite globally for, you know, trying to get the mass market, and let the Fresnel lens technology go back into China, because they've just shown that content is king. They've just shown that like a platform that has the most content is going to achieve the biggest user base, even if you've got better hardware. So why not just, you know, go do this with the XR2 Gen 2 and make this an even harder play for everyone else?
Yeah, we've seen that over and over again in computing and especially gaming history, where content is king. Microsoft forgot it and lost the console war to Sony in many ways. Meta has, you know, been saying that since the Oculus days, and since, you know, Palmer Luckey and Nate Mitchell, they've been hammering home content is king. They managed to bring in that gaming matters culture to a tech company like Facebook, which is remarkable, because we've seen Google and Amazon and others just completely fail to really grasp proper hardcore gaming and just fail to integrate cultures. That Meta is even able to ship a major game with an acquired studio like Asgard's Wrath 2 to me is remarkable, given what we've heard from game developers about how badly it integrates. It just frustrates me that Pico seems like it was so close. You know, it really was. It got, like, if you compare it to the Vive Elite XR store, these are completely like made up numbers, so please don't quote me on this. But let's say, for the sake of argument, the Vive Elite XR, Vive XR Elite store has like 15% of Quest's content, and Pico has 80%. It just seems like content is so much king that even if you get close, it doesn't matter unless you can match it. And again, it just comes back to what I said, where if ByteDance really wanted to compete with Quest, why didn't it just fund some Asgard's Wrath 2 scale titles? Why didn't it do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, then you get to some really, I mean, I can't even imagine how these discussions go, but like, if the content has to be modified considerably to run inside of China, is it less valuable to the people making those funding decisions? You know, devs, it's a different decision for a dev to get their content running on the Pico store worldwide versus getting their content running inside of China mainland. And I don't know whether the people funding these projects for ByteDance really cared about the global rollout of these games, if they just wanted the Chinese version of the game to access that main audience in, you know, within country. To David's point about funding, though, and that's what's kind of killing me here with this idea that maybe they're shifting to pursue Vision Pro. I can count on my hands the number of VR developers that I can imagine being trusted with a couple million dollars to make a great hand tracking based VR game. I think that there's that few number of people in the world with that level of expertise to take that much money and turn it into a compelling hand tracking VR game at the end of the day. And I can't imagine Pico coming. If Pico comes back and says, we've got $3 billion to throw at developers, just a hypothetical number, you're not going to get $3 billion worth of quality content for hand tracking out of that. There's no way for Pico to spend efficiently. Like I'm straining to understand how Pico ever returns. I don't think it happens.
Yeah, thinking about this content funding situation more, I wonder how much of this is a kind of cultural difference in the gaming market, you know, where we've seen that in the Chinese gaming market, the kind of free-to-play, freemium, mobile-style games are a lot more popular than they even are in the West, and they are incredibly popular in the West. And in many ways, a lot of that has actually come out of China, especially with the kind of internet cafe culture as well. You've also seen that when Chinese mega tech companies invest in Western gaming companies, they start to focus more on these kind of less hardcore, more casual, freemium, free-to-play style games. And I just wonder how much of that is in ByteDance's culture and how much of that is the problem that we're talking about when it comes with Google and Amazon. How much of this is just a Chinese tech giant not really grasping core gaming and not really understanding that Asgard's Wrath 2 and Assassin's Creed Nexus are the style of games it should be funding? You know, how much of that is that issue? I'm sure that over the next few months, if the situation is dire, we'll probably see leaks start to come out and people start to talk about what happened at Pico. But I know you're saying, you know, it's hard to see how it's not dead, but I want to maybe just take be the devil's advocate here and say that I do think Pico still could have a future. It's just because ByteDance has a money printer and has, you know, TikTok is a money printer. They could do this for years. They could do this for decades as long as TikTok doesn't disappear, which I think we can pretty confidently say TikTok is not going anywhere.
Well, I mean, unless it gets banned in the United States, which goes full circle to the original, like, why didn't they? Maybe they didn't. Maybe they sacrificed Pico to let TikTok live type concept. Yeah. We're going to stay on top of it and figure out what's going on with Pico, with every other maker in the market. Those the things that David Heaney is sort of alluding to there, that people might start sharing what was going on. Where is the Just Dance VR game? In all likelihood, that game is dead. And we're not going to see the likes of it from Pico anytime soon. But we're willing to give them the benefit of the doubt and be surprised. So we're going to pursue that story as we go into the last few weeks here of Thanksgiving. So Black Friday is coming up. Look for deals for VR headsets. Keep in mind everything we've advised on this show about the current market as you're considering those deals. We'll be back here next week on Tuesday at our normal time. And thank you so much for tuning in. This has been a wonderful discussion, a lot of great comments out there. And yeah, thank you so much to our supporters for making sure that we can really cover this with their support.
Thank you, everyone.